hour I thought I was still able to try to carry on. It's been a long time coming, but I know the change gotta go. It's been so long, a little too long, but the change.
WIOX is supported by Grand Gorge Tire, family-owned and operated, and ready to serve your needs for new and used tires, including mounting, balancing, and anti-corrosive lubricant. Walk-in service welcomed Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5. Grand Gorge Tire, Route 23, between Grand Gorge and Stamford, 607-588-4100. WIOX is supported by Margaretville Hospital, a member of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, a critical access hospital offering comprehensive medical services, including emergency, cardiology, imaging, rehab, and a retail pharmacy. 845-586-1800. WIOX is supported by the Delaware County Chamber of Commerce, a catalyst for sustainable economic prosperity in the Catskills, fostering cooperation, forging partnerships, promoting tourism, providing legislative advocacy, and building strong community ties throughout the region. More information at 607-746-2281 or DelawareCounty.org.
Hello, I'm Robert Steed, host of Uncompromising Music, Sunday mornings at 7 and Monday afternoons at 2, right here on WIOX Roxbury. Community radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable Channel 20, and WIOXradio.org.
You are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate if you like what you hear. You can also get WIOX on any smart device through the FM radio apps. This is From the Forest, every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John's out tonight, but I'm here, and I'm here with my friend Hoppy and his significant other, Julie.
Yes.
Yes, and you guys have been on before. Hoppy Quick comes from, where do you come from?
I come from up the road from you, Ryan.
Town of Olive, I guess.
Town of Olive.
We'll leave it at that. But how you been, Hoppy?
Been good. Yep. Yeah.
What have you been up to?
Pandemic Doesn't really change my lifestyle that much.
Right.
Worked alone, so it's still the same, carving. Working on gardens. Best thing you can do right now is plant seeds and grow a garden. So been working on that, helping other people with their gardens too.
That's good. Getting a little more self-sufficient people are. Tonight's topic is finding spirit in the forest with Catskill Mountain woodsman Hoppy Quick. And Julie, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Been working on my bus.
Your bus?
Yeah.
Explain.
Have a 2002 Freightliner FS65 that I converted into a tiny home on wheels. And I decided I was going to redo it. I've been living on it for 3 years in Brooklyn. And it was a little bit too dark and not very efficient. So I tore out the back of it and started over. It's pretty nice. It's turning out nice.
It is. Good time to do that kind of stuff.
Seems like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, just explain a little bit about yourself, Hoppy, you know. What exactly you do? I mean, I know you, some might know you as one of the most famous chainsaw bear carvers.
I don't know about that, but
oh,
I mean,
come on now.
I've been 40 years carving in the Catskills.
Yeah. 40 years?
Yeah, since I was 15, 16, back in 1978 or 79.
No kidding.
Yeah, rustic artisan, pretty much just make my living from trees. And I'm a tree hugger, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
Yeah, so...
And your family's from West Shokan?
My family's from Olive area, Samsonville, pretty much, but, you know, from Ulster County since 1600s. So family goes way back, got some deep roots. And I got a pretty loud voice. I hope I'm not yelling in this microphone, am I?
No. Hoppy, are you related to Tom Quick?
You know what? he's not really that... yeah, I guess some people say no, and some people say yeah. So
yeah.
Your sister did the DNA. She said, or the ancestry thing. She said you're not directly descended from him.
Okay, yeah. It's probably a lot of Quicks, maybe in the area. I mean, that was a Route 209 kind of.
Not just that, Quicks. Yeah. My grandmother was a Barringer's, so the Barringer's and Quicks in Samsonville areas, you know, were pretty dominant.
Yeah,
and we've been there for a long, long time.
And what do you know what they were doing in the 1600s or 1700s?
Actually, before they ended up in Ulster County, they were Masons, and they ended up in New York City. They helped build the Trinity Church, and then they ended up here. They were quarrymen, they were blacksmiths. You know, they lived under the Ashokan Reservoir. They were you know, mountain people, and you know, as the reservoir. Got our Olive City, which was under the reservoir. How's that? That property got claimed by New York City.
Yeah,
you know, wealthier people got the bottom land, and my family got the rocks.
Yeah,
they were up on the mountains. That's why, when you're hiking up Breath Hill, you go past a foundation. That's the foundation of probably my great great grandmother.
Yeah, the hill farms.
Yeah, the hill farms, the bony ground. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So whatever they needed to do up there, which was quarrying stone, and they became tradesmen, yeah.
And how'd you meet this guy?
I was doing an exhibit at the New Paltz Tiny House Festival in 2017 in July, and he just gets on my bus and comes in and checks it out and says, "This is what I came here for." It was not like a lot of the exhibits at the tiny house. I think they only had one.
Yeah. Well, most what I was really disappointed was I went to the tiny house fest because I have a bus that I was making into a tiny house.
Right.
And my bus is a 1951 F6 Ford. And I actually went to the tiny house fest thinking I was going to meet some cool people who were making these cool homes and just out of whatever, and it was more contractor modulars.
Oh, yeah?
So you basically penguined down the hallway, took a look in a line of people, turn around, come back out, you know, like, and then check it out, and they're like, you know, $100,000 tiny homes. It just wasn't what I went there for.
Now, you know, we're on the radio, so it says a lot that you have a tiny house, because how tall are you, Ab?
I'm 6 foot.
Right.
I actually had to cut the roof out, though.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, that's cool.
I'm always wearing Red Wings, and that makes me like 6'2". So yeah. If I put my boots on, I smack my head.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And you have names for your buses, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine's Brigantia, which means lofty one. It's a Celtic goddess. And she's like a victory goddess.
Yeah.
Nice.
And mine is named Donna Grace after, I didn't actually purchase my bus. It was given to me by my friend Janet Nelson. I think I told the story last time, but when I needed a change in my life and I decided I wanted to find a bus, I was looking, I could probably afford a newer bus, but I found a vintage bus in Craigslist, and I took it and I posted it on Facebook and said, if I've acquired any spiritual power, I need to manifest this. And the next morning, Janet got a hold of me and said, my mom passed away out in California. Her name was Donna Grace. And I would like to, in her memory, get you this bus. Yeah. So that's how the bus came to be, and that's how her name came to be.
We started doing our buses at the same time without, we didn't know each other.
Yeah, that's how we connected.
Are you guys going for your CDLs or something?
Yeah.
We are.
It's a commercial driver's license for, like, big buses, right?
Yeah.
Well, we thought we'd drive school bus.
Yeah.
Because we're artists, and we got time to go out and do a bus run in the morning and a bus run. We were coming right down to our, we trained for like 5 weeks, mm-hmm. came down to our road test, and it was coronavirus and the world shut down.
They canceled it the day before our road test.
Yeah.
So we got a call from work recently, and they said that it's going to be back on, but they'll have to let us know when.
Yeah.
Because they still want us.
But so, yeah, it's delayed, but you'll eventually be able to, to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's nice.
It's good to have the CDL too, because I do have a big bus.
And she's got air brakes.
You got air brakes. So. And technically, it's a house on wheels now, registered as a house on wheels. But
there's a registration for house on wheels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Well, that's what they didn't know that either in Queens, where she got registered.
Yeah, did they give you problems?
No, I said I converted it, and they're like, does it have a bathroom? Yeah. Does it have a bedroom? Yeah. Does it have a kitchen, place to eat, somewhere to cook? Yeah. Okay.
But I don't think they get asked that at motor vehicle that much down in New York City.
They just thought it was so cool.
So they, up here, they run you through a little bit more of a...
Well, I also have an R endorsement on my license, which gives me leave to drive an RV, a big RV. But you're supposed to take a road test for that. And they didn't know about that either. And they just stamped my thing, gave it to me.
Now they know.
Now they know.
So you're educating the DMV.
Yeah, but I can drive that bus like nobody's business.
But now she'll have an air brake endorsement on her CDL.
Yeah.
How do you heat this thing?
A wood-burning stove. For both of us, we have
Now it goes stoves. Back to how we met, because she would come up from New York and she needed firewood. So I'd say, there's firewood is all over the place.
Yeah.
So I'd cut her firewood.
Yeah, but my stove is tiny, so you'd have to cut like 8-inch pieces or 7-inch pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah,
probably doesn't take much to heat it up, right?
The stove is pretty small, so
you have to stay up all night to feed it.
You have to feed it every couple hours, so it's kind of a pain.
It's a ice shanty stove.
Yeah,
man.
But I'm getting a little potbelly stove. We got one.
That's too bad. I know you guys a few years ago. I had a baker's oven, and it takes Nectar makes them in Australia, you put up the flue, and then it circulates to the oven below.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice!
And it takes 12-inch wood.
Yeah,
and it would have been perfect for that.
I've seen the bakers.
It wasn't a cheap stove at the time either. I spent a lot of money on that.
Wow,
it was cool, you know. But and it has pots. You know, you can take the inserts out and put a pot on there on top, so you can cook. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, in Donna Grace, we have a yodel.
Yeah.
And that takes 16-inch wood, so that stays pretty warm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you only have to feed that once at night.
Yeah.
So the coronavirus comes out. We have not spoken about it on From the Forest, but I figure one show we probably should address it and how people are coping with it. And I see that on your Facebook page, you've been live streaming a ton.
Yeah, well, it's... Pretty funny thing happened when this coronavirus first, when they were shutting down everything, I made a post that said, you know what, be positive, be optimistic, take this time to work on your garden, to do the things that you want to do around your house, and plant seeds, you know, and think ahead. if it makes you feel better, it'll make you feel better to grow a garden and do some stuff. And it went viral, kind of, I guess. It got 93,000 shares.
Yes.
Wow.
So yeah, I had, like, in one day, I'm driving my mom down to get her Lyme's disease IV thing. And I said to Julie, I said, my post this morning is like 7,000 people, and it just keeps going up. And then, like, an hour later, it was like 12,000. So,
I had a nice picture of him with his arms out, like he's giving the world a big, great big hug.
Yeah. So, I actually, you know, we got, I'm a woodsman, and I make my living from the woods. But if you want to be a woodsman, I found out a long time ago, anymore. You don't have to do the craft shows and stuff if you're connected to social media. So yeah. If you want to stay in the woods and you want to do your art and you want people to see it from where you live, then the best way to do it is on the internet. So I do a lot of work on social media, especially through Facebook. So what ended up happening, we went on, we did a live stream to thank everybody for all the positive comments.
Yeah.
And I had like, I don't know, $7,000 people friend requests, and it was just, I never had that much people coming at me at one time, you know. So we did a live stream.
Overwhelming at first.
And we saw on, at the same time on social media, there's a lot of negativity, a lot of henny penny, the sky is falling, and a lot of hysterics. And, you know, I'm really not into that. And, you know, I'm not a henny penny. If the sky's falling, then I'm going to be working on making a roof so that nothing falls on my head. Right. So pretty much we did with Facebook was put these live stream videos. Then it ended up going into morning sunrise on the Ashokan and taking people into the woods and saying, you know, this is happening to the human beings right now, but nature's still going on doing its thing. So because my spiritual beliefs are that I am nature before I'm a human being. It just, you know, if nature's going to thrive, I'm nature, I'm going to thrive. So it's kind of, that's the mantra. Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen more people outside in the past few weeks than I have since the 1980s.
Yeah.
growing up in New Paltz, I used to see a lot of people outside when kids were outside, I think, a lot more. And
yeah.
Just in the past 3 weeks, I've seen both kids and adults outside way more. I think everyone got their yard work done in March.
You know what's the nicest thing? Drive down the road and seeing fathers pushing their kids on bicycles because they can't go to work.
Yeah.
Or I have my friend Eric Madison. I don't know if I can say names, but he's telling me, you know, normally he's got little league practice. He's running from here. He's got his daughter going doing this. They're shut down. They're playing board games. He's taking his kids and they're going fishing. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is, even though we're into this really horrible thing right now with this pandemic, there's more to our world other than us. And, you know, nature's out there and it's still, it's going on. And we have to learn to adapt. And this is a change that's happening in our world. And there's going to be some people, the henny pennies, there's going to be some people that really have a hard time letting go and they don't want to change. And there's going to be people, this is where I go from head to heart. Yeah. There's people that live inside their head. And, you know, I think we've been evolving egotistically as a species. And I really think that our heart center is connected directly to the universe and to nature. So if we can get ourselves centered, reconnect with who we really are, and we can feel our thoughts and rather than think them, then we have more empathy for the planet and for the world. And it's more positive. So that's where we're coming from, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, remaining positive. I think that's a good thing. I can't argue with that. And I think people have been hardest hit by this is also when you surround yourself by negativity. I went to Rutgers for a training a few weeks ago for, you know, pruning trees and stuff like that. And I was shocked about how many people are on their phones. And I'm nothing against phones. They're a great tool. I mean, that tool is more powerful than anything you could find in the 60s. You know, I mean, like by many degrees. So I'm not down on them. But at the same time, you can't get away from it. You know, there's constant – people forget that the media is also there to clue you in. And oftentimes negativity draws you, you know, draws people, and they, it keeps you hooked in. But at some point, other people get on media like yourself and try to attract people by positive energy, and I think that's a good thing. I mean, because people close to me are sucking themselves dry by looking at negative things, and it just ends up, you know, bringing you down after a while. But people who are outside, I think, I've noticed anecdotally, are not as fazed by this. I think I can say that anecdotally. I have no data or anything, but are not. I was talking to one of our members at the Catskill Forest Association. She was over in Woodstock. She's like, I just, this has not brought me down. I'm concerned about it. I'm concerned about my family, but it hasn't brought me down, and maybe I'm heartless, but it hasn't. I said, well, you're outside all the time. You're doing the same things you've been doing for the last years. You know what I mean? She's like, yeah, it's probably what it is, because I just walk around and still see the same things, and you know what I mean? So I think there's something to that.
Yeah.
Some people's lives haven't changed that much, but then there's people who do have to go to a job like that's inside every day.
Yeah.
And if they've been told their non-essential job, their job is non-essential, they don't have to go to work. What do? They go outside. That's what they want to do. That's their choice. And that's kind of telling, isn't it? That people really do want to be part of nature and be outside.
Well, we're organic, and we are directly connected. But, you know, we think because we have this brain that you know, we really don't need nature. We can control it, and we can overcome it. And, you know, here we are in a pandemic at worldwide. And, you know, what's crazy is, Julie will tell you, and if you see any live videos, the amazing thing is, I mean, I can get on in the morning – in live stream, and I'm talking to a girl in Belgium. There's I don't know how many people that come in from Australia and
Scotland
and Ireland and Canada, the UK, and they're daily visitors to the live stream now. And we're like a family. We call it the Heart Tribe because I've been emphasizing, let's get out of our heads, let's get into our hearts. And so the whole thing about the gardens and getting back to nature is understanding that nature exists for the whole. It's for the whole, and that the human ego looks only after the one. So people are reconnecting and having this moment. I mean, how many times is this ever? It's never happened in my lifetime where the whole world shuts down and money has no meaning. And all the responsibilities that you say, I don't have time to do this because I have to go to work and I have to make this money and I got to do this. And to make that connection with your authentic self, which is your heart center, I believe I'm a spiritual being, and I believe that I'm a spiritual being. But I also believe all of nature is a spiritual being, and that we're all part of the same thing. So this empathy will only help the planet. And it already has been helping the planet. You know, so yeah. I know there's something really hard for people, and I got a 78-year-old mom I worry about, and I try to protect, and we do the isolation, and we're doing all the precautions, and we feel for people. I have a friend who lost his father, and his father I have some you know, long fond memories of from back growing up in West Shokan. He died in New York City from the coronavirus. John Prine passed away from the coronavirus, and I'm a big fan. So, I mean, we're all feeling this, but it's just how we choose to go through this and how we come out of this is going to
inform our direction going forward, right?
Yeah, it's going to choose direction. Either there's and I really truly believe there's going to be two pathways. There's going to be the people that can't let go, and there's going to be the people that can move forward. So I kind of like, and the sad thing is, I have a lot of friends on Facebook. I got a lot of local friends. I'm seeing the negativity. I've been unfriending and putting them aside because I don't want, you know, listen, I understand people are going through this the best way they can. And I'm not telling them people how they got to go through it. I'm just saying, I got kids. Ryan, you got kids. You know, your wife and Julie, and she's got kids. And if we go on and we give out hysterics, we're not helping anybody. We're all going through the same thing.
Right.
But if we scare kids, because kids got to know that the adults are holding it together and that we're going to move ahead in a positive thing and that they don't have to be afraid. And the same with the elderly people who are in the high risk and those other people with compromised immune systems that are in the high risk.
Mm-hmm.
If they're sitting home and they start seeing this stuff, because all you got at home right now is the internet. And if you go through and you start seeing, like, you're like, hey, I'm over 70 and I got a little bit of a breathing problem, this is possibly going to, if you got some people out there saying, you know, here's the mathematics.
Right.
Here's the math. So many, whatever, you know, I don't want to hear that. You know what I mean? I think we lost our faith. And not faith, I'm not a religious guy, I'm a spiritual guy. Faith in myself, faith in the people around me, because I believe all the people are nature and nature's God. So everybody, I got faith in everybody.
Yeah.
And I got faith in everything. So
if we went by mathematics alone, no one would go in the forestry field. Loggers definitely wouldn't do what they do, right?
Right.
The mathematics are against them.
Yeah.
It's the most dangerous job on land, yet they do it because I feel like most of them really do love what they do.
Yes.
We've had loggers on this show, and to me, they're some of the most exceptional people there are.
And, you know, the loggers I know, I got a buddy who you met, Mickey. He logs for Ghent Wood Products.
Oh, that's the Boone guy?
Boone, yeah.
Boone.
Well, you know, Boone's a logger mostly because Boone likes the woods.
Yeah.
So if you looked at Carl Lane or any of the, Carl Lane passed away, but any of these loggers,
yeah,
they actually, believe it or not, it's not about the logging as much as it's about they like being in the woods.
Yeah. Well, you've been on before.
Being in the woods, right?
Yeah, I love being in the woods.
Yeah.
You know, you make your living from it one way or the other. And it's a rural land use. You know, remember when we had that show Defining Rural?
Yes.
And I think you're going to see, hopefully, I hope, that maybe we'll return to some more rural land uses, maybe some more acceptance and tolerance of rural land uses.
Sustainable living for sure.
Yeah.
People are going to start using their land to take care of their families, because this is a big eye-opener right here, this pandemic. And,
yeah. You
know, it could come around again. So you want to be ready. So you put in a big garden. Some you got to clear a patch of your land. You got to do some foresting. And you got to...
canning.
Yeah.
Canning, yeah.
Yep.
Chickens.
Yeah, chickens. Everything. Pasture. So
milk goats, cows.
Yep. We're down the road probably going to do milk goats.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah.
No
Make
kidding.
Make some cheese and some soap.
Yep.
Soap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I make soap from deer fat.
Yeah.
No kidding.
It makes excellent... it's a hard bar.
Yeah.
It lasts a long time. It's not going to set up like your store bought.
I'll buy one off you.
Yeah, I'm out
we
of it.
I'm soap
well,
like crazy.
You know, I was at the Forest Festival and someone offered to make soap, one of our members, and I gave him all my deer fat, and I'm still waiting on
and
it. I wish I'd ever gave him all my fat.
How do you get deer fat? There isn't a lot of fat on deer.
There isn't, but you don't need much.
Right.
So just above the rump areas where you're going to find fat, and some years are better than others. The does have more fat because the bucks run themselves.
Yeah.
Stupid, right? Males are very vulnerable when they're chasing females,
right,
as all of us mammals know.
Yeah.
But they have no fat. But the females will, especially in a good year, and you have to render it, which is not difficult. It's just a fancy term for boiling it and taking out the chitlins.
Yeah.
With a scoop, and then you run it through cheesecloth, and you have pearly white rendered deer fat.
Mm.
And then from there, you mix it with lye.
Yeah.
In a certain way. Just remember, the lye snows on, or no, the the lye, you sprinkle it like snow on the water, not the other way around.
Right.
Otherwise, you will hurt yourself.
Right.
Oh my God.
And then you mix it with the fat, and it makes great soap. Really good soap. But I'm not a professional soap maker by any means, but it makes soap.
Well, I think, though, it's cool that you're making it for your family, because that's where we're going to go back to, where people are self-sufficient and maybe they don't need to go and get, you know, the thing about spiritually connecting with nature and stuff like that, and believe it or not, is when the mind shuts down and the heart takes over and you make that connection, we consume less. I think we find out we become more content with what we have.
It makes me more appreciative.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, when you use the bar of soap to clean your face or your body, and, you know, you remember, oh, yeah, that was came from a
deer's butt that I'm rubbing myself with.
It came from the deer, and there was a lot of acorns and browse it took to make that fat, you know. Yeah. But it's funny. You know, and then you think about where you got it and stuff like that. To me, it's makes you, yeah, it's a gift. It's reminiscing.
Even the work you put into your maple syrup. I mean, it's a tremendous amount of work that goes into maple syrup.
Yeah. Oh yeah, there is. But it's worth it, you know.
Oh yeah,
it is definitely worth it. But if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. John's out tonight, but we have Hoppy Quick and his significant other, Julie, and we're talking about finding spirit in the forest with Catskill Mountain woodsman, Hoppy Quick. And I got one in here since John Prine just passed away recently.
Talk much more. She sits and stares through the back door screen, and all the news just repeats itself like some forgotten dream that we've both seen. Someday I'll go and call up Rudy. Together at the factory, what could I say if he asked what's new? Nothing, what's with you? Nothing much to do. You know that old trees just grow stronger, and old rivers grow wilder. Just grow lonesome, waiting for someone to say hello in there. So if you're walking down the street sometime, spot about some hollow ancient ash. Please don't just pass them by and stare as if you didn't care. Say hello in there. Oh.
All right. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. John's out tonight, but tonight's topic is finding spirit in the forest with Catskill Mountain woodsman Hoppy Quick and his partner Julie. So Hoppy's been on before. We've talked about many things. Defining Rural, I particularly like that show. And also stories from the Catskills as far as old-timer stories like Buddy Eckert.
Yeah.
And we've talked about your chainsaw carving. But tonight is probably about as close as we're going to get. Well, we are talking about the coronavirus and how people cope with it, right? I mean, how we cope with it matters.
Yes.
And how do you think we should cope with it? Or how are you coping with it, I guess?
I'm just, well, you know what? Not, like I said before, not much has changed in my world. I'm a woodsman, so I'm in the woods. And I'm just sharing, I guess, my philosophy about how, you know, you don't really have to extract something from nature. Nature gives to you, and it can give you some nice calm feelings right now. You know, if you're not walking on top of one another in nature, you know what I mean? Like a freeway full of people, you know, giving yourself some space. But there's, you know, and it, you know, Julie has taken me to New York City. And I was a little stressed out because I'm not used to being around that many people. But I was really fascinated with the New York City parks, and we had a conversation about that at one time.
That was one show, yeah.
Yep.
Hoppy goes to New York City.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's a little bit of nature everywhere, you know. And, you know, up here, we're in Roxbury, which is, I think, the home of John Burroughs.
Sure.
And Woodchuck Lodge, I've never been to it, but it's not far from here.
It's not.
Julie and I are going to actually go do a live video, I think, maybe Friday, and go to Slab Sides. Yeah, I don't know if you've ever been down there.
By the Hudson?
Yeah.
Sure.
And so, you know, Whitman and Burroughs and all those guys were friends. And a lot of what I've gotten from my friend Saul, the teachings of different mountain people, and, you know, they shared the wisdom of what they read from Burroughs and Whitman, and they got me into it. So, Emerson. So, you know, if you read those guys, you can't help but have a connection to nature and understand that it has that you're directly connected to it. Yeah. And I truly believe that. And I guess in order to do what I'm saying, you kind of got to be a spiritual person.
Connect with your spirit.
Yeah, I don't know if you. If you're an atheist or something, maybe you won't look at it the same way. And I talk a lot about head and heart, and I say it takes a lifetime to go afoot, to get out of your head, to get to the middle of your chest. Mm-hmm. And it truly does. It takes a lot of journeys. But nature, it just feeds you its energy. And we breathe it in, we breathe it out. And, you know, our feet's on the earth, and Burroughs used to say our head's in the sky. And that's all you need to know. Yep.
I think being out in the forest, too, is humbling.
Yes.
You know? It's like when I go hunting. Hunting's very humbling. And maybe some hunters don't want to admit it, but I'll speak for them right now. Sometimes you miss.
Yeah.
And there's nothing worse than missing a deer with an arrow or a bullet, and the deer running away, and you have no one else to blame but yourself.
Yeah. Sometimes the hunt is just being out there, though, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what you eventually come back on. You say, yeah. Well, I was outside today and it wasn't a loss, and, you know, the deer got away and I enjoyed all these other things, and that's what hopefully happens. That's what happens to me. But there is no one else to blame. You know, the birds are flying around and they're just doing their thing, and you missed, and or whatever. Or you just couldn't find anything, but hey, you're having a nice day.
Yeah.
But to me, that's humbling, and that's a good thing, I think.
Well, it's good to know that there's more to this world than human beings. I think that's where the head part comes in, where we think we are it. And then the problems that we have in this world are our problems, and they're major. But we're really only a small part of this planet and this universe. And there's so many other beings here that we have to connect with our empathy, and we have to connect to a point where we understand that we're part of something bigger than ourselves, and that's the humble part of nature. It does humble you. I totally agree.
Yeah. For me, I also think we need to admit that we're a part of things.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, instead of, like, sometimes we treat nature as like it's a preserve or a museum. And
right.
It's something you visit and then you go home. And to me, environmentalists have been battling this for, well, really since the early 20th century. What do you preserve it and just look at it like a diorama, like John Muir, who was religious about nature? Or, and then the other side of that are people who still revere nature, but they're more conservation-minded, and they admit that maybe we are a part of things.
Well, there's definitely the circle of life is true. So the hunt is totally there in nature. As long as there's respect and there's a reverence of the predator prey, each holds each in high regard. I mean, you know, I'm sure, you know, I think we said this in the videos too. It's like, you know, if there's a lion out there and the lion's going to take an antelope, you know, that's part of the nature of things. And the human thing is, you know, there's also this thing like, oh, I love lions. But if you run up to a lion and the lion takes you out, you know, you're not a very smart human, because you're not respecting what it is and its place in nature. You got to respect the bear.
Yeah.
You got to respect the different animals and let them be who they are. And they'll let you be who you are, you know? So this whole thing, I totally think that we've been evolving in the wrong direction. So I'm trying to go backwards. So when you say going back to those old timey ways, I truly believe we need to, and we need to get back to where, and this is going to sound really kind of weird right now because we're in this pandemic, but there is a positive thing happening right now with humanity. Some of humanity is moving in a direction of stopping and just recollecting who they are and taking a look around and being present in the nature of things and understanding nature's presence. I don't know the scientific or Latin name for some of the stuff out there in the woods. I don't know the Latin name for trees and stuff like that, but I can tell you I'll hug a birch tree and I'll hug a hemlock and it feeds me and I feed it. And that's the connection I'm talking about. You know, you can Google anything and you can sit in your room and know everything there is to know about nature. But if you don't get out in nature and absorb it and send your energy into nature, you're missing something.
That's kind of like, that reminds me of the book Braiding Sweetgrass. I don't know if you've read it.
No.
It's, I highly recommend it. But she does talk about that. She's a botanist and a teacher, and she goes out and with her students and she tries to give them the lessons that everyone expects her, and they're taking notes. And she always feels there's something missing. She's not giving them exactly what they need. And then she eventually just lets them play and discover nature on their own. And if they have questions, then, you know, she can answer them from heart rather than from her vast reservoir of knowledge.
Hmm.
And it changed everything for everybody.
Oh, it's so true.
The whole lesson. But yeah. It's an excellent book. I recommend it. I think she's from around here, or the Adirondacks, maybe.
I mean, I get people saying, "Hop, you're a woodsman. What's this plant?" I said, "I don't know.
Right.
I really don't know."
Yeah.
I go, "Ryan," I go, "there's a tree. I can't split it. What is that?" "Oh, that's black gum."
Yeah, the black gum.
So it looks like ash, but I don't know what it
is. Yeah.
So I am a child in the wilderness.
Yeah.
But I'm also a wild child in the wilderness. I understand, before I'm a human being, I understand that I am nature. And I am animal. And I think what we're trying to get around to is nature's full of instinct, and we lost our instinct. So what I'm trying to do is understand that I want to reconnect with my instinct. I don't want to have thoughts from my mind. I want to have instinct from my heart that tells me who I am and how I fit and belong. And so that's what the woods give me. That's the spirit of the woods. If you were to ask me what the spirit of the woods, it's reconnecting me with my instinct, my human animal.
And so you think the forest is calming to you and to other people, you think?
To me, I could crawl right into the dirt. I mean, I'm so at home inside the woods. And when Julie takes me to New York City, the first place I run is those big old sycamore trees, and I just latch onto them. And sometimes, you know, we're walking down the sidewalk in Times Square, and I'm looking at a homeless guy with a sign that says, you know, I'm hungry, and there's five pigeons eating a slice of pizza like 6 feet away. I'm fascinated by those pigeons.
Right.
And not that I don't want to. There's just humanity. Humanity, just the ego of humanity has taken over to the point where we think we are the only beings and everything on this planet belongs to us for our consumption. And partly nature does, life feeds life, and there is a circle of life in nature, but we've taken it to beyond that. So I really truly believe that that nature, if you, you know, we're following leaders, we're following people. You know, we just spent 4 years arguing with each other over politics. Sure. I don't hear about politics anymore.
No.
And right now, if you're not hearing about politics, we're out of our heads. We're not looking to debate on social media. We're not looking to get angry where we got, you know, this page and this page. I can't go there because of this. Right now, people are thinking, you know, and I know a lot of people, I'm going to grow food, and I'm going to grow food not just for me. I'm going to grow food for like four families.
Yeah.
People are putting in big gardens. People are planting things. You know, people are planting fruit trees. They're going to be planting berry bushes. They're talking about sustainable living, you know, doing stuff with their property so that they can consume less but create more for themselves and for the environment around them. And that means their neighbors. So empathy now is coming up. I believe it is. There is a substantial fear out there, and I think we gotta, you know, I don't watch the news.
Right.
I don't watch the news. And you know what? If you watch the news, the one thing I'll tell you about the news is it sounds like the trailer for a horror movie. It's like, you know, it's like the coronavirus.
Got the music in the background.
Yeah, it's got everything. It's already got you scared before the news even comes on.
Well, there's a culture of catastrophe, I feel. You know, I've stolen that from someone else, but I do believe that. I think it's been going on for 30 years, this culture of catastrophe. And I'm not saying that what's going on isn't a concern. But let's remember before and after. I mean, we name snowstorms. Mm-hmm. Every flood is another locust coming at us, and it's hard to know when something is real anymore.
Right.
And I know some people are probably thinking, well, something's real and someone next to you dies. Well, yeah, that is. People die all the time. But it's just constant bombardment, you know, of fear, and I don't know if that gets us anywhere.
Well, we all know it's there. We're all dealing with it. It's because I deal with it with a smile. I mean, I'm seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. That doesn't mean I don't care and that I'm not being realistic. I'm coming at it from heart, and I'm coming out of it with a heck of a lot of faith. I have faith. I really truly believe that majority of this planet are empathic beings, and that if they have given the time and the time out, that they can reconnect with their authentic selves, and that they will open this empathy up, and they will be more concerned about each other. They'll be more concerned about the planet, and they'll become, will become the human beings that maybe that we're supposed to be.
Yeah. This is about as philosophical as we get on From the Forest. And tonight's show is Finding Spirit in the Forest with Catskill Mountain Woodsman and his partner, Julie. That's okay. We could be philosophical tonight from the forest. You know, I feel like whenever I get into debates with people, and obviously sometimes I'm just as bad as the next guy, not listening or over-talking someone because you get too passionate or whatever. But the one thing I don't tolerate anymore is when someone questions my intentions. If we just admit that most of us have good intentions,
mm-hmm.
I feel like the argument or the conversation would be better.
Yeah.
Sometimes on Facebook or whatever, people will begin the conversation with, you don't care about people. And it's like, how do I, you don't care about the forest. You know, it's like, well, I can't really argue anymore with this person. If we admit that most people's intentions are good, it's usually how we want to get to that end point where people disagree, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But well, how do you talk to someone who just says my intentions are to kill people or I don't care? Well, and after that, I'm like, I'm out on this.
That goes back to the head and heart. It's a very simple analogy, the head and heart. If you're in your head, you're looking after only one person, yourself, and you're going to shoot missiles at the person you're debating with, whether they're real or not real.
Right.
And so if both people are coming at each other, you know, empathy is like a hawk's eye view of a communication. So two people standing and they're having a disagreement. If you're centered in your heart and you let your heart feel your thoughts, don't just think them and spit them out of your mouth, because they're really not real. But if you can come from an empathic thing, then you're really going to listen to what your person. You don't have to try to sway them into your opinion. Neither one of you have to fight that out. But you know, you get a hawk's eye view of the whole thing around, and your communication will be a heck of a lot better.
Yeah, I find it with natural resources management or environmentalism, where people say, "Well, you don't care about the environment. You know, you just want to cut all the trees." And it's like, well, the conversation's over at that point, because that's not true. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I mean, there's got to be that empathy in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
That let's just assume that you have good intentions, that you care about the environment or whatever. And now we can talk about how to get to common goal.
Yes, Julie, I walk away. A lot of I just walk away.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to get in the head. I want to recenter. I mean, I could be talking to somebody and somebody say something. We're building the garden right now for somebody that moved up from New York that was in a panic, and they were a little bit afraid, a lot afraid.
Yeah.
So they got their family out of there and they came up here and they rented a place and they just wanted to build a huge garden. So I'm working on a garden, and the guy says, "How old's your ma?" I said, "My ma's 78. "Hey, she ain't gonna make it.
Jeez.
She ain't gonna make it." And I said, "Yes, she is. No, she's not." And we worked that out, but I understand. So the empathy there is I had to stop, because I could get angry and say, "Hey, you have no right to say that." And I could go and I could throw missiles at this guy and we could part. But we're building the garden together.
Right.
And we're doing something positive. And this guy wants to spend money and build enough food and grow enough food for like 10 people around him.
Yeah.
So he's got his heart is there. He just came a place from New York City. You know, upstate here, we're not at the place that New York City is right now. You know, they're ahead of us. They're dealing with more. We do have to protect ourselves up here a little bit, because some people are commuting back and forth to the city, which is really not cool. But if this guy, I have to step away. I walk away for a day. I go up on a mountain. I purge myself up there, screamed out. And I come back the next day and say, "Listen, you're thinking about this. You're coming at this pandemic from someplace fear. I'm coming at it from a place of love. So I'm not going to try to turn you into my way of thinking, and I definitely do not see yours. But you can't say insensitive things. And as long as you agree with that, let's just build this garden." So at the end of the day, when we built this garden, the guy looked at me and said, and he said, "You know what? I understand what you said, and I should, you know." And I said, "Well, all we got is faith. You got to believe everybody's going to come out. You got to believe that we're going to come through this, you know. You got to build that roof, because the sky's falling. So you got to protect your head. And you can run around and scream, or you can build a roof. So let's build a roof." So that's what we did, and we got through it, and, you know, we're better for it, both of us.
Yeah, and you're noticing that through your live streams and stuff. Like, what are some trends you're seeing? Any questions and stuff from people around the world, the United States or whatever?
I think the people coming to live stream, and Julie will tell you, most of them just want a place to go that's positive.
Yeah.
It's like
coming for the positivity.
We don't talk about coronavirus. We talk about Winnie the Pooh. this morning we talked about right now we are kind of like the caterpillar going into the chrysalis, and that we're liquid.
Yeah.
Reforming. Mm-hmm. Reforming to become the butterfly. So when we come out of this thing, we come out as coronavirus, and like I said, some people ain't going to change, but some people are.
You told them about a nice dream you had last night, too.
Yeah, I had a dream. Julie and I were in a supermarket in our Carhartts, and there was a song on, and we started dancing and waltzing around the supermarket, and there was hardly anybody in there. A couple kids were smiling. So it's all about calming people down, get them into their hearts, so they get out of the fear that's in their heads. The stuff that's in the media, the conspiracy theories about everything that's going, there's so many stories out there right now on the social media that's amazing. But I don't want to think about that stuff. All I want to do is feel. I want to feel the moment, and nature helps me feel the moment. That's the spirit of the woods, too.
You have regulars who show up as well every morning, and they kind of talk amongst themselves and calm each other down. If someone says, I had someone that I know pass, and they talk to each other.
Yeah, there's a community that built called the Heart Tribe. April. And April's from up in Canada, right?
Yeah.
And then Heidi's from Belgium. And they're like regulars. And Beverly's from the UK.
Yeah.
And we got Sammy from Scotland.
Yeah.
You know, there's a community there, and they support each other. And
it's like a meeting every morning. Like you're taking them to church in the woods.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm off on my soapbox and I'm talking about something and I start to read a question. The question wasn't for me. It was for somebody else in the thread.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
But
it's kind of cool how it happened. It's unfolding.
It's organically grown. And I don't know what it is. All I know is if it's helping people, I'll keep doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think people, myself, I'll speak for myself. I don't want to be reminded about it all the time, and it's nice to have somewhere to go. Maybe your live stream once in a while, think about something else, like the forest. That's what the forest does for me a lot of times. Purposely at the Catskill Forest Association, when we're not here on From the Forest, I haven't really thought about it. I haven't sent an email blast out or anything because, you know what? I feel like people want to just look at a nice scenery or, something you're doing in the woods that's cool and stuff. Because I get nonstop emails on my email thing from every organization. It doesn't matter if they make a tool or Home Depot or they're sending me something on COVID. And I'm like, what is the Tractor Supply sending me something on this? And they are. I've gotten Tractor Supply every week sends me something.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, what's going on here? Yeah. They tell me about their hours. I don't really care. I'll go to your website.
Yeah.
But in any case, I think that's nice to have something you can go to.
And we're meeting people from all over the planet. And you know what? We're going through something, not just in America. It's worldwide.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't even know. Somebody said, hey, I'm from Papua New Guinea. I'm like, I don't even know where that is. Right?
Right. Yeah. Well,
yeah,
believe it or not.
From Germany.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yesterday or today.
Germany, huh?
Yeah.
It's crazy. Well, that's all the time we got on From the Forest, guys.
Wow.
The hour flew by.
Yeah.
And if you missed it, it was Finding Spirit in the Forest with Catskill Mountain woodsman Hoppy Quick and his partner, Julie. And that's all I got. And see you next week with Gary Mead, Mr. Gary Mead from Arkville. Talk about...
good guy, Gary Mead.
Yeah, he's
talented,
a good guy.
Man.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right.
In the street, a dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd end up this way, getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year. Flowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games in an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town where the river runs down from the forest.
con, man con, but life goes on, for the city never sleeps. And to an old forgotten soldier, the dawn will come no more. For the old man has come.